Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, Shane Told. Like every week, as I take you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers, and we got a great episode this week. This is a long-awaited guest. We talk about how I think like 5 years ago this was discussed, and I'm so glad it's finally happening. Jeff Rickley of Thursday is here. We go way back. We go way deep. Old stories and old memories. And I was smiling. I don't know if you hear it in my voice right now, but I'm smiling right now just thinking about the smiling I did for the hour we spoke. Even after we finished the podcast and we hit stop, we still talked for like another 20 minutes. This guy's awesome. I love all his projects. Thursday's obviously just legendary at this point, but to pick his brain was a real treat, and I can't wait for all y'all to hear this thing. It's a good one. Before we get into that, you know, some show news, some things I want you to be aware of. The first one, real simple. If you want to get in touch with me, you always can. You can send me an email, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. But the big news is that we are taking this podcast onto Twitch. We've been doing it for a couple months now, but it's getting more serious. Every Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I am having a guest live. You get to see us on video. It's completely free, and you can even interact with us in the chat box. And those conversations, they will end up here, but it's pretty cool to watch them live. And we've got some great guests coming up next week. We have Andy Sizek. That's going to be a cool guest. We got Kyle from Picturesque the following week. And March 16th, Nothing Nowhere, who just put out a fantastic new record. So Joe will be joining us, Nothing Nowhere himself, live on Twitch. To check that out, it is twitch.tv/ShaneTold. Real easy. Go on there. Give us a follow. It's a great platform. If you think it's just video games and like nerd stuff, you're wrong. Music is a huge part of Twitch now, and I am super, super excited to be bringing this show on there. If you want to support the show, check out the Patreon too, the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club for a couple bucks a month. It gets you in, and it really does help this show keep going as well. The link for that, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. I want to thank everybody that tuned in to the Silverstein virtual concert series, Out of This World, we called it. There was a bit of an alien thing going on, spoiler alert. If you missed it, all three episodes are on demand right now. You can watch at your convenience at silversteinstore.com, but hurry because they're only going to be up until March 1st. That's 2021 if you're listening to this like 5 years from now. And we're back and we're playing shows. Oh my God, it'd be so good. You're lucky to be where you are, people of 2025. But if you missed it, silversteinstore.com gets you in only for a few more days. And it's a really fun series. So if you like my band, be sure to check it out. Well, I know you want to hear this rad conversation that I had with Jeff. So let's just get right to it. Not waste any more time. I can't wait for you to hear it too. Here it is, my conversation with Jeff Rickley of Thursday and No Devotion. Jeff, dude, we've been trying to do this for a long time.
Yeah, man. It's been like, I feel like since the first year of your podcast, we've been talking about it, right?
It's true. And, you know, so many requests for you, too, on the show. Obviously, like a lot of people put our band in the same category because we were on Victory Records for years, and it makes a lot of sense. So, hey, it took 5 years, but here we are. And it's really, really nice to speak with you. You know, it's funny because I think the last time I talked to you was honestly like maybe Warped Tour 09. I think you guys were on that one. Maybe, man. Like,
we were on 08.
Okay, man. Maybe it was even longer ago then.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is crazy. I remember nerding out with, it was you and Ben from Armor for Sleep. Okay. And we were in the lunch line on Warped Tour.
Dude, that lunch line, right? It's
right?
Like so many friendships made. And enemies. I feel like enemies have been made on that lunch line too.
For sure, man. There's always a little drama in the lunch line. But no, like I remember standing behind you guys in line and like I know Ben pretty well and just listening to you guys talk about the glory days of New Brunswick basement shows and stuff like that was like a weird little Canadian dream because, you know, I grew up idolizing New Jersey, like, I, you know, with Lifetime and Penfold and the other great bands, you know, from where you just, I don't know if you took it for granted or you knew it was amazing, but I remember that moment and just listening to you guys, like being a fly on the wall and just loving that so much.
So that's cool, man. That's awesome that you were like digging it and kind of like noticing it. It really was a special thing. And I definitely didn't take it for granted. I was like, so when I was a kid, I lived in, this is going to be a little inside baseball maybe for people who aren't from New Jersey or New York, but okay. I was from like Northern New Jersey, I was right across the river from New York City.
Yeah.
So for me, like when I was a kid, I went to the city to see shows. I went to, you know, I snuck into CBGBs before I was 16 because you had to be 16 to get into CBs. And once they knew you weren't 16, if you didn't have fake ID or whatever, they like looked out for you and were like kicked you out, you know? So I would go there. I'd go to Coney Island High. I'd go to the Cooler. There's all kinds of places you could go. The Grand, the Academy, the Roseland Ballroom. Like,
yeah.
There were so many great places in New York, you know, so that's what I thought. I thought like, I'm going to move to New York someday and it's going to be the best thing ever. And then I moved to New Brunswick and got exposed to the basement scene before I had a basement. You know, it was like Lifetime had a basement. The Bouncing Souls had a basement. Like there were a lot of other bands that had basements before I had one. And I was just blown away. You know what I mean? This was something so much more tangible than even CBGBs. Like this wasn't a place where you got kicked out if you were a kid. It was like all ages. People weren't drinking. It was very communal. Everybody knew everybody's name. Like the local bands pulled like 80 kids to every basement show. You know what I mean? It was like one of those things where it's just like, and like our local bands were like the Bouncing Souls and Lifetime. You know what I mean? It's like, that's insane.
It is. It is insane. And I mean, it grew from there. And what's cool about it is how much of a part of that you were. I mean, even I knew you. Like, I knew your name. And I was in Canada because I knew about this kid that, you know, because you put shows on in your basement, right? Like, we knew.
We did the last You and I show. Yeah. Stacia's last time in New Jersey was in our basement. Like, there were a bunch of, like, pretty legendary shows. We did, like, Hot Water Music and Leatherface. Like, Leatherface from the UK came. And it was, like, Hot Water Music, Kid Dynamite, Leatherface. That was all one show. You know what I mean? Like, we had shows like that where it's just stacked.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, the first Thursday show was also in your basement, right? I mean, I think I read Midtown Saves the Day. We're on that one.
Midtown Saves the Day, the movie. I think it was Midtown Saves the Day, Movie Life, Inside, and Poison the Well when they had two singers.
Right. It's incredible.
So it was like, that was one show. You know, that was our first show. Like, we were a lucky band. That was our first show.
Right. And I mean, Poison the Well coming up all the way from Florida, too. Like, that's a trip, you know? I mean, it's crazy. But the thing that I think a lot of people these days, you know, kids don't understand was that shows back then, everybody was kind of in it for this greater good. Like it didn't really matter what band you were in. I would be moshing for bands before I played, you know, and then I would go on stage wearing the clothes that I was wearing that day. And there was no rock star mentality at all. Like not at all.
So I remember like a typical show for me when we were starting out was like, I'd get home from classes. I'd check to see that like the flyers were still up and maybe I'd go to Kinko's where I had a friend working who would like slip me the card, the employee card and let me like do like 100 free flyers. Right. because I still didn't have, like, I didn't go on message boards. Like, my roommate luckily did and would put up the show flyer on, like, Angel Fire sites. Yeah. But I'd go out, I'd go back down to the square, I'd go to the vegan places that everybody ate at after shows, and I'd put up some flyers. And it would be, like, free show, donation at the door. Like, just donate to the touring band, you know what I mean? Whoever it is. I'd get home, see if the bands were there yet, hope they'd start showing up, because sometimes, like, our headliner wouldn't show up till, like, 10 minutes to 11 at night or something, you know what I mean? I'd be like, I don't know if there's a show. So I'd go do all that, and then I'd help the band load in, and then I'd, like, sometimes if Thursday was playing, I'd make sure my guys were there, we'd set up, we'd play, I'd break it down, I'd talk to people, like, while the other band was setting up, and then I'd stand in front of the stage, like, the very, not stage, you know, there's no stage, it was basement.
Right.
I'd stand
on
in
the
front
floor
of the band,
yeah,
face to face with the band, like, right in the front, just to kind of remind all the locals, like, hey, this band drove 7 hours to be here. You know what I mean? They're going to get paid $60 for 7 hours of driving. Like, let's make it worth their while. Let's be right here and pay attention.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, what you said about, like, moshing to the band before you played, like, I remember there'd be a moment where, like, a lot of times a friend would put me up to, like, putting on a band I didn't know, where I'd just be wondering what they were like. And I'd be watching, like, to see the first song, and I'd look over at, like, the three people next to me, you know what I mean? And we'd sort of smile, like, yeah, this band rules, you know what I mean? And then everybody was in. It was like, because we didn't know, were they good? Were they not good? Were they cool?
Sure. Well, that's the thing. A lot of times, I mean, again, there was no way of listening to music, even on, like, on the internet. You know, I remember you guys had, like, an mp3.com thing early on, but even, like, but that was all there was. And before that, there was nothing. And, like, unless someone sent you a tape, literally a tape, because that was all there was. You never heard these bands before. I remember, because I'm from Oakville, Ontario, you know, just a suburb of Toronto. And I remember there was, I forget who was headlining the show, but this band from Buffalo was coming up to play. It was, like, their second show ever, and they were called Buried Alive. Seeing that, having no idea what to expect, just like, okay, yeah, they're from Buffalo. I guess it's, like, ex-members of Hourglass. Oh, I really liked Hourglass.
Victory represent, by the way, we're talking Buried Alive.
Of course.
Right?
This is that. I remember when Buried Alive signed to Victory, and I was like, what? How? What? This is crazy. Like, but you know, seeing that and just the ability for a band to blow your mind like that there in front of you, and you had no idea who they were. There's no stage. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, there's a vocal PA. That's it. You know, you're standing behind the drum kit. You know, like, not always. Yes. Yes. In the vocal PA where I grew up was our band PA. I was one of the only kids that had a PA.
So
mine would get borrowed for shows, like, every weekend. Someone would come by and get it, and it'd have a, you know, a few more dents in the speaker grills, and hey, it was what it was. But
yeah, that was part of being in a community back then.
Exactly. That's like the biggest thing that I wanted to talk to you about, was that community aspect, because you were such a big part of it. And then it seemed like you guys sort of got thrusted out of that community in a way. You know, you signed to a label like Victory, which is obviously still an indie label, but I mean, we've all heard the horror stories now. I don't know what it was like when you guys signed.
That's a really good question.
I would love to talk to you about it, because I've heard all the stories and everything from, you know, your contract to the Thursday whoopee cushion and all that stuff, but obviously, I have a little bit more of a deeper understanding of it all, right? Being that I was there for four albums with my own band.
Dang, four.
We survived. Okay. We survived.
You guys thrived. You guys survived and thrived. And, like, I'm really happy that you guys were able to make such a great situation out of it. And so, like, I guess probably I'd go back to, like, why we even signed a Victory, you know what I mean? And I think, like, looking back, it's easy to be like, why would you do that? But at the time, you know, we were a New Brunswick band, and there was a New Brunswick band on Victory, a band called Dead Guy.
Of course.
And Dead Guy, to me, were, like, about as cool as you got when you got to be a little, like, older and a little, like, better than all the bands that I was playing with, you know what I mean? So I was like, whoa. You know, Dead Guy's label might be interested. invested in us. And like, they just signed Grade. Yeah. Like the Grade record hadn't come out yet. And I was like, that's crazy. You know what I mean? They signed Grade. Like that EP, Separate the Magnets EP, was like a very defining, like, whoa. You know, I think the Swarm played our basement or something.
Wow.
But the Grade EP was all I could think about. Was like,
for sure,
they're doing something cool.
I mean, to jump in for a second, you know, they grew up 10 minutes. Like, we're the same scene. Grade is from 10 minutes from, without Grade, there's no Silverstein. 100%. They're like my biggest,
for sure,
my biggest influence. So, and that's probably why we ended up on Victory, to be honest. But no, it's true. Like, these bands, I mean, Dead Guy, so influential. Without Dead Guy, there's no Dillinger Escape Plan, for example.
For sure. Yeah. And like a bunch of other stuff too. You know what I mean? Like,
and to your point, I mean, the stuff that Victory was putting out was,
it was cool.
It was cool. It was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, they had like a side that was like really tough guy hardcore, which I like hardcore. So like, that wasn't a turnoff for me. Like, sure, I wanted to do something else. I wasn't a tough guy. I didn't go kick people in the face at tough guy shows. But like, did I like Firestorm? Yeah. Firestorm was awesome. You know what I mean? Like, I loved Ink and Dagger, and I loved that Sean like went to the show and threw yogurt at Earth Crisis, because I thought that was insane. But like, I also really liked Earth Crisis. You know what I mean? People tend to like be like, you're this or you're like this, you're this or you're like this. Back then it was such a small scene. It was like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm more on this side, but like, I like it all.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, yeah, I want to have the Dillinger Escape Plan play in the basement, but I also want to have Rainer Maria the next week, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So we signed to the label, and you know, speaking of community, the first time that I realized maybe I didn't know what I was getting into was, so I started going to, if any Victory band played, I would go to their show and introduce myself and say, hey, we're label mates now, and I'm really excited because your band's awesome, you know? And like, anytime you want a show, I do shows in New Brunswick, New Jersey. You know what I mean? Like, and the response that I got was not what I expected.
No.
Like, it was like, oh, you're fucked. You guys are fucked. What did you do? Why would you sign to Victory? And I was like, wait, what? So that was a little shocking. And I also just kind of was like, but it's probably hazing. Like, I'm not familiar with this. I'm not like a football guy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm not like a jock or whatever. Like, I just don't get their sense of humor. But I remember like Kyle being like, oh dude, bad idea. I don't know what you're thinking. And I was like, what? You know, and the Boys at Fire guys just laughed, like laughed and laughed and laughed. And I didn't even answer. They just thought it was so funny.
That is funny. And I know Kyle and Nathan very well now, you know, like we're all in our 40s now, I guess. And I turned 40 2 days ago, but you know, it is just funny.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you, man.
It's a good one. It's a big one. I was dreading it. And now I was like, man, it was like the best birthday of my life.
It was, especially, well, my girlfriend did an incredible job of like putting together something really great for me, considering I can't do anything for my 40th birthday. We're like on complete lockdown here in Canada. So it was a really good time, and I'm like 2 days in, and I feel like I've got a little spring in my step, which I wasn't expecting. So, but anyway, I was also
sober, which was a big difference for me.
Yeah,
at 40 to be, you know, to be celebrating a birthday sober was like really different and really good.
Awesome.
So it was like a really positive birthday, but I love it. I'm psyched that we're both 40 and we're like, you know.
Yeah, it is, man. And talking about the old days and Grade and Boys That's Fire and Victory Records, and let's not get too off track because this is a great little flow we got here. But yeah, and it was the same with Silverstein too when we signed, and it's a little later down the road, so we'd already heard. We went into this knowing, you know, we could be fucked, but we also didn't really have a lot of options. Grade gave them our CD, Charles from Grade, and who now makes records with Bruno Mars, which is super weird, but
He played he's played with a bunch of people in between, right? I remember seeing him and being like on TV shows with like other artists and being like, wait a second.
Yeah, he for a while, well, that's just a completely weird story. I'll tell it really quick because it's a good one. So yeah, my friend Charles from Grade played drums in Grade for a little while, and this was summer of 2002, and you know, we Silverstein, we felt like we finally had our shit together a little bit. and we were going to send off some demos. So I randomly talked to Charles and he's like, hey man, did you send one to Victory? And I was like, yeah, we sent one, but he's like, well, I'll call them. I'll make sure they listen to it. So I was like, okay. So literally like 2 days later, they call us and want to sign us and the whole process starts. And probably like we have the contract, we're about to sign it, we're going to go down this road. I get a call from Avril Lavigne's management.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. Yes.
And I get a call from them the only reason they know who I am is because I was filling in and playing bass for my buddy's band that was kind of more like a more mainstream kind of act. I was filling in for them. So they call me and it was so funny. They said, yeah, like you really have the right look we're looking for. And I was like, oh no, like that's the worst thing you could have said to me.
Yeah,
like I'm definitely not doing it now. I probably wasn't anyway, but I'm definitely not doing it now. And I just said to Charles, I was like, hey man, I know you don't have a band and you're like the most cool punk guy ever, but like, hey, maybe you could do this. And he did. And he was in the band for like 2 years and that got him, you know, moved to LA and now he's got a few Grammys for working with Bruno Mars, which is, and he's doing awesome. And I love that guy. So
incredible.
It is incredible how so many people that are in like the top of mainstream charts and working on this stuff, like grew up in the community that we talked about at the beginning of the conversation. That's such a cool thing too.
Each other. I feel like the community that we came from, it's like you actually do want to look out for people and get them a gig and have like good people around as much as you can in the music industry.
Yeah.
So like we tend to like try and help our friends up. Whereas I think there are some other aspects of the industry that can be quite cutthroat. And so like you do see a lot of like hardcore kids like playing in high levels now because we actually sort of like look out for each other. You know?
Exactly. 100%. Okay. So you're going to these shows. Everyone's telling you you're fucked and we make
Full Collapse.
Yeah. And that record, which obviously is a classic now in so many ways, and you deliver this record to the label.
Yeah.
What was the reaction? They didn't like it, right?
Yeah. They weren't crazy about it. Tony was like, Cross Out the Eyes is okay. But there's no single and like the only even song that maybe if we edit it, we could give to radio or something is like, is Standing on the Edge of Summer. And we were like, well, one thing, what does the radio have to do with anything? Like this is Victory Records. You know what I mean? Like we didn't get that they had aspirations to be a much bigger label. We were like, as opposed to what? Like the Hatebreed record is your biggest record. You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean singles?
wasn't it weird? Wasn't it weird that they had like three commercial radio people working there? They had a radio department. They did when we signed. I couldn't believe it.
I think they maybe had two people at the time.
Yeah. So strange to me.
It was pretty weird. And we were kind of like, didn't really know what to make of it. Like Tony had a call with me where he's like, tell me your favorite record label. And I was like, Discord Records, you know, Fugazi, like Q and Not You, like Lungfish. It's clear to me, like Discord Records.
Oh, I bet he called like, them. I bet he called them losers instantly.
He was like, they mean nothing.
Yeah.
He's like, that's the past. That's over. Victory Records is now the future. Mm. And I was like, oh no. You know what I mean? Because I just didn't even think that was a possibility of how somebody would like think about stuff. It didn't seem community to me, which is what I was interested, you know?
Exactly.
I didn't want to like beat my peers or be like bigger or better. I just wanted to be part of the community with like my own voice getting to say something, you know?
For sure. Well, you guys, I mean, there wasn't success out of the gate at all, but you worked hard and you did a lot of tours and, you know, I think the friendships that you'd made earlier paid off because you were on a lot of tours and you ended up, you know, taking notice. And then all of a sudden Understanding in a Car Crash is on MTV. And that was a wild moment, not just for you guys, I bet, but honestly for all of us to see that song on like the most mainstream outlet there is. That was a really big, like huge moment that doesn't get talked about a lot, you know, when people want to bring up the history of emo or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy breakthrough. And And it was like, you know, it was very unexpected, since we spent 8 months, you know, with the label talking about dropping us, and like nobody cared about our records. And, you know, it was just kind of like, so it was sort of out of nowhere. We were on tour Saves the Day, and there's this huge, like, the song just broke through. And by the end of the tour, like literally in a couple of weeks, everybody knew every word to every song. And like, you know, it was just a complete overnight transformation. We had been working really hard and like really being on the road, but the success didn't come gradually. It came all at once. And so like by the end of that tour, we were booking our own headlining tour for places twice as big as we had just been on a 1 of 4, you know, we were 1 of 4 with Saves the Day.
Yeah.
And now we're about to headline places twice as big. And our booking agent's like, you're going to sell every single date out. And I just like, I didn't even know what to think about that, because it just seemed so foreign, you know. And then immediately Victory was messing with us and just kind of negging us, which I didn't even understand was a concept at the time. Like, I didn't understand that somebody could be negative towards you but not hate you and want to get rid of you. It was just sort of like a control thing, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
And so as soon as you guys gave that demo to Victory, they immediately started telling us that they didn't need us anymore, that we weren't important, that they had like the better Thursday from Canada.
No way. And, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think it got in our heads a little bit, but I think we were also like, you know, like probably just smart enough to be like, Silverstein sounds more like Grade than like Third. Like, they don't really sound like us. Like, I get what he's saying. It could fill the same slot, but it's like not their fault that he's like trying to make us feel bad with them. You know what I mean? It was like a weird thing, but it was sort of like, yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with those dudes. You know what I mean?
That's crazy. No, I had no idea that that was ever a conversation or a threat or anything. I mean, we had the same, you know, I went through the same motions that you went through, you know, hitting up bands that were on the label and being like, hey, we're label mates. And like, you know, I never heard of Taking Back Sunday before. And Victory sent me their CD and I was like, this is fucking good. And like, I would love to like tour with these. And then of course they blew up and then that wasn't a possibility, but you know, we were trying to tour with you guys and Atreyu and I mean, every band on the label. And we never, ever toured with any of those bands because nobody wanted to help out Tony, right? That was more what it was.
He was, you know, 1 week he's like, you have to take them on tour, which is like, that's the wrong approach. You have to, right? Because it's like, well, I don't have to do anything. He's like, if you're in a band, that's your response to somebody telling you you have to do something. It's like, I don't have to do anything. And then his second approach would be like, because they're better than you and I'm going to make them more famous than you. And you're like, oh, screw you. You know what I mean? Like, screw you. I don't want to help you or your bands.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's unfortunate because I think, like, you know, there's a lot of people that should be friends from that era. You know what I mean? Like, it took, even like the Taking Back Sunday guys who I was already friends with, like, it got weird because we were both on this label and he's trying to play us against each other. You know, it's just, it got really weird. Yeah. All of that stuff.
Yep. It's crazy.
But I'm glad that, like, we all seem to have gotten through it okay with our heads intact and we're all buddies still, and it's like, you know what I mean, it's like, it's all good. Like, it didn't get to us, it didn't like break us down or anything, you know. So
no, and we, you know, we all got out, you guys got out pretty soon, which is kind of incredible when I look at you know, we did 4 albums, we completed our whole contract, and Atreyu was on the label for a long time too, and they wanted to get out. And I read that you guys could get out if you signed to a major.
That was the loophole in our contract.
What a weird loophole.
It was, so like, there's a thing that we learned then, which is that like, if a contract is badly written, if it's ambiguous, then the room to move on it goes against the person who wrote the contract.
Okay.
So it was ambiguous that said like, you know, basically like, unless you go to a major label, was sort of an ambiguous thing. It wasn't explicitly said. I don't think it was meant to be in there in that way. I think it was meant to say we could sell you to a major label.
Right.
But because it was written very like loosely around that, we were able to kind of, you know, get away with going instead of being sold, because he was in the process of selling the whole label at the time.
Right.
And we didn't want to end up where he was selling.
Right. That was the MCA thing, right? That never shook out, but
it did. I think it shook out, and then it like and then it weirdly fell through after the fact is my impression that, that it did actually go through. And then before all the payments were made, it was like a blow up happened, which, you know, I can see how that might happen, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. If you know anything about Tony, but the, so this is like, I'm just trying to get into your psyche and your mindset here. And I want to talk about that too, because you've been through so much, but so all of a sudden, you know, you're one of four opening for your buddy Saves the Day that you literally know from your own basement.
Yeah.
You know, then you have all of a sudden, pretty much overnight, you have a song blowing up on MTV. You're playing 1500 cap rooms, selling them out. And now you're signed to a major label. And I read this thing and I never heard this before. So I don't want you to think that I heard this before, but people called you Tone Jeff. You weren't comfortable as a singer. You didn't feel like you were really a singer. You were kind of like this kid that was really into this community and into this scene, and you really cared about it. And now you're put on this place where it's like, okay, now you have to be a rock star now, and you don't have a choice. You have to do these things. And I just, that must have been so incredibly difficult, scary for you.
Oh, yeah. It was... You know, basically, I think there was sort of a sense for me, like, yeah, we're going to get out of this victory thing, which is going south, like, real fast. And we're going to end up somewhere where they appreciate us, you know, which is what every label clearly seems like. They really appreciate you when they're like, oh, this band's going to be huge. Like, I really want to sign them. So I was like, they get what we do. They appreciate us. But, you know, it became a thing that's like, well, now you have a chance to actually be like one of the biggest bands in the world. And like, it's going that way, you know, like this record's heading towards gold very, very quickly on like a little tiny indie that's never sold even 100,000 records before. And, you know, you guys are a phenomenon. Like at the time, bands from our scene didn't get as big as Thursday was getting. Like it was really a phenomenon at the time. You know, afterwards, like, sure, we've had tons of huge bands come out of our scene, but like at the time, this was sort of like, what is happening?
Yes.
So suddenly, you know, that it is like, but you need to be able to sing. And it's like, well, I sing, I do my thing. And it's like, yeah, but you're tone deaf, you know, you're tone Jeff, you can't sing. And that was like, oh, you're going to try and change me. Like you're going to try and make me into something that I'm not. And like, actually my band probably wants me to be able to sing better. Like actually maybe everybody wants me to sing better. And like, maybe even I want to be able to sing better, but you know, wanting it doesn't necessarily make it possible. Right. So it was scary. And they got me a vocal coach who was like, you know, probably $250 a session, like twice a week or something crazy. And he had five students. It was me, my hero, PJ Harvey, who was who I wanted to sing like my whole life. Bono,
oh my God.
Christina Aguilera and Mick Jagger were his other students.
Wow.
And so like, I would be struggling with something. He'd be like, you're my only student that can't get this. And
oh
I think like, well, yeah.
Yeah, Christina Aguilera is one of them.
Yeah, like, what do you expect, man? Like, I can't get something that Bono can get. Like, oh, okay.
Wow. You know?
But you know, I tried, and like, I was singing better. You know, on World of Time, I sang a lot better than I sang on Full Collapse. And, you know, but I was singing higher, and that was a lot harder for me to hit on tour, which was like, so it became like a whole different, I basically traded out my issues, which is that the newer songs, I could sing better, but the newer songs were harder to sing live. So I was singing worse live. And then like, we played Conan on Thanksgiving, which is like, that's the biggest show you can play on Thanksgiving. It's like Conan O'Brien. And we had just done like 9 months of touring, and my voice was completely shot. Like, I couldn't sing at all. And it was like, we played our ballad. We played what was going to be our second single, War All the Time. And like, I just couldn't sing. You know what I mean? It was like painful. It was like a painful thing for me to be stuck in that situation where it was all being decided for me. And I had to go out there and sing something that I could not sing because I was so exhausted. And that was really tough, man. That was really, it really did some psychological damage. And from that point forward, I started trying to break up the band over and over and over again. And it was really tough, you know, cause I loved the band. It was like the best thing I've ever done in my life. And I love those guys, but I just couldn't handle an expectation on me that was something that I probably would never reach. And was something that, like, it was not one of my dreams, was not to be like the next big famous singer who could sing perfectly. It was never one of my dreams. Like, I had already gone farther than my dreams. I had already gotten bigger than like Lifetime or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was, to me, was like, what, you know, I, all these other dreams that everybody else has, these aren't my dreams and I don't know what to do with them. And that was really tough. That was really tough.
Yeah. Wow. No, I mean, geez, the TV performance is such a, nobody does well. It's really hard. It's, you know, everything is super unnatural. And then, like, a lot of times it's like happens at a weird time. Like if you do the morning ones, like forget that. But even if it's not, then like still like no one sounds good on TV. No one does.
Yeah.
You know, and then some rant, like it's even if you have someone mixing it, they still like, you're have not their
allowed
own.
To have monitors as a singer. You know what it's like. Yeah. It's like you're not allowed to have a monitor because it shows up, the monitor itself messes up the audio for TV. So it's like, well, how am I supposed to sing myself? It's like, use your in-ears. I don't have in-ears. I don't know what to do. You know, it was really scary.
Man, well, that's crazy. I mean, yeah, you know, you say I tried to break up the band over and over again, and you guys did sort of seemingly fall into this place where, yeah, you guys did seem to kind of come and go a little bit over the time. Like, I wasn't sure, like, oh, I heard they're breaking up. Oh, they did break up. Oh, well, they're back together. Well, they're doing this. You know, it was from an outsider, but also like a peer of yours, it was confusing. And, you know, I know that you started dealing with addiction and heroin and everything, which I heard rumblings about from friends, mutual friends of ours, saying they're worried about you, but I didn't know if I believed it. But it seems like that it led, all this pressure led you down a really dark path.
Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, it wasn't just the band. There was like a lot of other stuff going on, obviously, like, you know, we all end up having to have lives inside the confines of like being gone 10 months a year. And, you know, and like I let a lot of the other parts of my life just sort of blow up because the band was in the way of all of it. And yeah, and just, I stopped enjoying being in a band because I there was never going to be a good enough for me. There was never going to be like a point where I could get off stage and feel good about the show because like, I just wasn't able to sing to the level that people expected me to be able to. It was like any growth that I had, which was a lot, like between that time period, like I got to be a much better singer, but it just wasn't ever enough, you know? And so it was like, there was, I didn't have a really, like, my life outside the band was kind of disappearing and my life inside the band was like only frustration and kind of like depression and feeling like not good enough. And I think it really, like, I think those like later records are really good and really interesting. And I think like the band wrote really amazing music, but I think you can definitely see me turning in a really dark direction and just being like going from sad songs to just like totally self hating, like, you know what I mean? Just really like a really dark turn from like sort of innocent kind of sad music, like the early records, to kind of like a really dark place. And I think it was like when the band broke up, it was like, well, you know, at least I didn't die out on the road or something, which is where it was probably going to head because I just couldn't handle it, you know? And then like the band getting back together and me getting sober was like a huge, positive thing. And like, it was beautiful. And like the band was playing better and I was singing, all of a sudden I could sing all these songs and It was just one of those things that, like, all the pressure was off. Like, the band had already broken up and not been, like, the next Nirvana or whatever everybody wanted us to be, like, way back. And it, instead, like, we had left our own mark, you know? And, like, I had found and produced the first, like, My Chemical Romance record. And, like, I had kind of, like, a different career than the one that I maybe expected, and different than the ones that other people wanted for me. But suddenly, like, I was like, oh, I'm proud of this, actually. Like, I don't feel like I screwed up. Like, I feel like I did my part to have something new to say in the conversation, and that's enough for me, you know. That's what I want. And suddenly, oh, I could sing all these songs,
right?
And suddenly, like, everybody liked our band again, where, like, the last few records of our career, if you remember, from being, like, you know, sort of like contemporaries, like, people stopped coming to see our shows. Like, people stopped buying our records. Like, it got really, like, you know, I mean, people could tell it was too dark, and it was, like,
right,
a bad situation. And then suddenly, like, when I was, like, sober and out there touring and, like, feeling good and happy, like, all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's like when Full Collapse came out, like, everybody's coming to see us. We're selling out two nights in every city. And it's like, it was, like, pretty good again, you know? So, cool. Like, I feel awesome. Really lucky, that I made it out the other side. And, like, I don't expect it to always be like that or anything. You know, it's like renaissances come and go just like popularity does. But it was a really positive thing for me to just sort of get to enjoy it a little bit for once
for
in
sure.
my life.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, I turned 42 days ago. It's a big milestone. And everyone's like, oh, you know, like, half the people were like, oh my God, you're, like, doing so well and you look so great. And other people were like, you're fucking old. Wow. You know? And it's like, yeah, I am old. And maybe I'm not in as, you know, as good shape as I used to be. And I've got a lot of gray in my beard and, you know, wrinkles on my face and all that. But you develop, you get a little more comfortable in your own skin,
yeah,
you know, as you get older. And it's, mm-hmm, it isn't quite the same as confidence. I don't really know how to explain it. It's sort of confidence, but it's different. And there's a weird acceptance that you've sort of, like, moved on from your youth, and now, mm-hmm, you've taken all that and you are kind of your own man now. And I really like that you figured that out. And it's really interesting from my perspective, especially, like, when you talk about, oh, you know, what Tony said about, oh, we've got this new band from Canada and they're like you guys, but better. And this guy can, yeah, fucking actually sing or whatever, like, yeah, whatever, yeah, he,
yeah,
said,
definitely,
right?
That was definitely said, yeah.
Right? Like, yes. This kind of stuff is funny to me because we were shit talked the other way. We were like, oh, they're just a Thursday ripoff, you know?
Right.
And oh, they're just like, this is just repackaged Thursday because Victory had success on this, so they've found another band. And like, with all due respect, I hadn't heard Full Collapse when I, you know, when we were making those songs. Like, I hadn't, yeah, heard them yet. So there, it wasn't the case. We, you know, so I was mad or whatever, right? And at,
sure,
the same,
yeah,
time, I, you know, once I learned about your band, and I really looked up to you guys, and I looked up to you as this guy that, you know, everyone admired, and you know, you were this kid from New Jersey and you put on these shows and, you know, yeah, you found My Chemical Romance and all this stuff. And I never expected you guys to be the next Nirvana or anything. You were doing your own thing, but it's so,
yes,
funny how, you know, you get, everyone gets in their own head about,
yeah,
what everyone's saying or what they're hearing or negativity. And then you kind of forget your own path and what you've done and your own successes, which now you've realized, and,
yeah,
it's a really beautiful thing. And I love that seemingly you've manifested success and positivity through your own personal success and positivity, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really, I don't want to get too, you know, capitalist critique. I can save that for some other podcast, but I do think that we have trouble in our current society letting different voices coexist and be communal, because we understand things best in, like, a ranking system. Who's the best? Who's number one? Who's number two? Who's number three? Who could, you know what I mean? And, like, and I think, like, that really manifests itself in the arts. Like, people try and say who's best, who's next, who's ripping off, who's this, who's that. And it's really, really, and really enjoy turning us on each other, and, like, really want to provoke a, you know, what do you think about this? This person said this. What do you think about this? Kind of, you know what I mean? That kind of like, what can I say to get them to be like, no, fuck them then if they said that, you know what I mean? And then it starts to chain reaction. It's like, you can make headlines about it and then people can understand that they don't like each other or whatever. And it's such a shame because, you know, the best experiences that I've ever had are when I'm helping other artists to find themselves. And like, that's, you know, what I was lucky enough to do with My Chemical Romance. I was lucky enough to have a hand in that with Touche Amore.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and a handful of other bands. And like, when you can help somebody see how special and unique they are, and then they like blossom out from it and become not bigger, you know, not more successful than you saw, but they become something beyond your vision for them because they are truly unique. It's like a really wonderful feeling, you know, because that's something that like you get to help give the world, was like give another artist their voice. And like, you know, they'll save people's lives. Like I believe that, you know, like art has saved my life over and over again. So like, you know, being a part of that chain and seeing like all of us together, you know, working to make something special for the world is that's the part that like I've gotten to really, really, really love and just feel so thankful for this whole life that I've had, is like getting to be a part of that and getting to have like friendships like I've made with all these people along the way. And, you know, like friends with people like you who others have tried to turn me against you, you know, and say like, oh, he's the guy that can sing and should have my job, like screw him,
right? So funny.
But like instead we get to like laugh about it all now, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty in getting to be 40 and like and having survived. You know.
No, I know 100%, man. That's a beautiful thing. I'm really glad that you've come out on the other side and that you're doing so well. I want to nerd out on you for 1 second. So one of my favorite records that's ever existed, ever put out, pressed on vinyl, is the Thursday Envy split.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love that record, and I really want to know the story behind it. Obviously, like, yeah. Envy, for people that don't know, they're from Japan. They sing in Japanese. They don't really sing, actually. They either scream or talk, and yeah. They're super experimental. In a lot of ways, they're super hard to describe. They have beautiful, like, clean parts, but then they also have spastic, like, almost, like, power violence parts. It's really, definitely, really, yeah, an interesting band. And then you made this split with them, I don't know, mm-hmm, 12 years ago?
Yeah, more than 10 years ago, yeah.
And it's awesome. And I just want to know how that happened. Because you guys did a song together, right, as well?
Yeah, so the way that it came about is kind of funny, like, I was really into Envy, and like Envy had done, maybe around the time of their first record, they had done a split when they were just a thrash band. They weren't yet experimental. Mm-hmm. They were like a straight up thrashy power violent band in the 90s. They hadn't done a lot, but they did a split with a New Brunswick band called Endeavor.
Oh, and, yeah. Yeah.
And so I was aware of them because of that split. I wasn't like, I love Envy. I was like, fucking cool Japanese thrash band, you know, like they're cool, whatever. Didn't think about them until I heard that they had done a record on Level Plane, which was, you know, Seisha and all these other great bands on Level Plane. And I was like, huh, I didn't really think of them as a Level Plane band. And then I heard all the footprints and I was like, what? This is amazing. Like, I love this band. And then somebody told me, oh, they're about to put out an even better one on Temporary Residence.
Yeah.
And so when I heard A Dead Sinking Story, I was like, yes, you know, this is it. This is like, because I kept trying to push theirs. You know, I was starting to think already in terms of the first United Nations record. And after War All the Time, I thought we could be like fast, thrashy power violence with like these big, beautiful, like lush Cure parts in between. And the rest of my band was like, you're insane. You're insane. But then when the Envy record came out, they were like, oh, I guess I can kind of see what you mean. You know, I don't think that's necessarily for us, but like this band's awesome. So I was just really into them, and they were finally playing New York and we were home, and it was the Temporary Residence, like, I think it was their 10-year anniversary as a label showcase. And they were sort of famous at the time for having found explosions in the sky and put out explosions in the sky.
Yeah.
And so they did like a 3-night thing in New York, and I got tickets for the Envy show, and I went, and they were amazing. And the guy who owned the label, Jeremy, he had said something in between bands. He had said, like, thank you for coming out. Like, it means a lot, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And afterwards, everybody's leaving, and I was looking at the merch, and I noticed that he wasn't leaving. He picked up a broom and started sweeping up the club, like helping the staff clean the club after the show, which I was like, oh, he's like us. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, this is a group effort, and if there are people that are cleaning the floor because of my showcase, I'm going to try and help them, you know? And I was just like, that's awesome. I'm going to go say hi to that guy and tell him how great I think his label is and how thankful I am that somebody put out this Envy record. And I'm going to offer him to help in any way that I can, if it's to take them on tour or whatever, you know?
Sure.
So I'm talking to him for a few minutes. He's super friendly, and he's clearly very tired and sort of like, who is this guy? You know, like, and yep, I'm like, yep. Yeah, you know, I could give you my number if you ever need any help with Envy. And he was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. What's the name of your band? And I was like, oh, it's called Thursday, like the day of the week. And he's totally dead silent, and he's just sweeping the floor. And after a minute, he's like, you know, there's already like a pretty big band called Thursday. Which I thought was the most genius thing. That I was like, oh yeah, that's my band. And he's like, oh, you're kidding me. He's like, your band is huge. Like, would you really want to do something with Envy? And I was like, yeah, I love them. They're amazing. You know, whatever I can do, like, tell me. And we kept trying to get the tour together for like maybe 2 years. And then finally, we were off the major label, and he was like, "What about a split?" And yeah, that's how it happened. It was really cool. It's one of my, after like the two records that everybody loves, it's one of my proudest things we've ever done, is that we got to do that split.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you for the story. That's
sorry, man, if it was so long.
No, it was worth it. Just for the guy sweeping the floor and saying, I just have this vivid image in my mind of that. Like, I don't know what the guy looks like, but I do, you know?
Yeah. And he's the best, man. That label, I give them so much love and respect. Like, he's really grown that label into something super special. And he's done it one step at a time. You know, he's never taken the easy way that could have gotten his label much bigger. He's really been patient with it. And he's awesome. We did two United Nations releases with him, and he's just awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So, well, hey, I won't take up too much more of your time. We got to shout out Velocity Records right now. You guys signed to Velocity Records, who's coming in hot with a whole bunch of new, signing a whole bunch of bands. This is, Dave Shapiro, who's booked Silverstein forever. I've known him forever. I mean, he was in a Victory band too, Count the Stars, back in the day, which is crazy. Victory alumni. Talk to me about that. Like, you have some stuff coming out. Can we expect some new Thursday music finally?
not yet. That's not part of the plan yet.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there was a moment where we thought we would start seeing what would happen, and then COVID hit, and it really screwed everything up for us, just because we were at a place where we were ready to stop touring and to spend a little more time at home. And we were like, maybe we could see, you know, before we had to get jobs and stuff, maybe we could see if there was like time for like a later chapter. And really, like, because we've all been isolated and not been able to get together, and some of us, you know, live in different states and stuff, it really screwed that up. And so some of the guys have had to sort of commit to their next, like, little bit of the chapter in their lives. I'm not saying it'll never happen, but it really did screw it up. And that's been a bum out for me, because I was hoping to, like, sort of sneak out some new music maybe with Thursday, sort of like nobody saw it coming. And now it's just like, that's not going to happen. That's not happening so far, you know?
Right. Well, the longer it goes, do you feel more pressure? Like, does it get harder? Because it's been a long time.
It's been over a decade since we've written new Thursday music.
Yeah. Is that make it, and, that must make it tougher.
It just makes it weirder because Thursday was a chemistry band, and it used to be that, like, no matter how weird the ideas that we had for writing were, you know, sometimes we just stick together 30 parts and call it a song. Like, there was no chorus, there's no, you know, it's just like whatever. And it would just work because we were so in sync with each other. You know what I mean? Like, we spent all our time together. We were always on stage together. Like, you know, some, we did like over 300 shows in some years. It's like, yeah, that's insane. You know it what is. I mean? So we would just, like, whatever it was, no matter how weird it would just work because we were so, so good together. And now it's like, it's just been so long since we've had that kind of connection that it's hard to say what it'll be like if we're able to pull something new out. So it's not so much pressure. It's just like, I don't know if it would work, you know, like maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Yeah.
But I, you know, our only rule for each other is like, the only way we'd ever release music again is if it was awesome. You know what I mean? Like, it's like no point in releasing something that sucks. Like we're not going to be like Road Dogs again. We're not going to be like trying to chase like chart success again or something. You know what I mean? Like, the only reason is like, it's so good. People got to hear how good this music is. You know, it's like, why else would we do it at that point? But you know, those guys are so talented that I think like if we ever do get a chance to write again, like probably something cool will come out of it. But it's just, yeah, it's gotten a little bit ridiculous how long it's been since we've released music. But you know, I've got a new record coming out on Velocity for No Devotion.
Yeah.
I think it's probably some of the best stuff I've ever done in my life. And
awesome.
I hate saying that because everybody says that every new record, but man, it is. It's so good. Like, I find myself really like, I just want it to come out because it's so fucking good. It's so good. It makes me so happy because it's really sad. It's extremely sad. It's like a really, really sad record, but it's not hopeless. And it's not like self-hating dark like I was getting towards the end. It's like a really beautiful, sad, pretty record. And I'm really excited for that to come out on Velocity too. And the stuff that's coming out from Thursday on Velocity is really cool. I'm really psyched about it. And I think like our diehard fans will really love it. It's not going to win any new fans over. It's definitely for our fans.
Yes. Well, yeah. So with the No Devotion and stuff, I mean, obviously, you know, you talk about COVID putting a damper on Thursday's plans. How are you working on music with those guys? I mean, being that they're from Wales.
Yes. Yeah,
that must be tough.
We finished like right before. I mean, that's just getting done. And like when I'm like, I just really wanted to come out, it's because we finished to have it ready. We should have been on tour all of 2020, basically.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, it's been done and it's so sick and I'm so proud of it. And like, even when I was on my last few Thursday shows, like with my cam and stuff, like, they had already heard the record and were like, damn, dude, this is pretty good. Like, you're singing really good. Like, this sounds awesome. So I'm pretty amped about it. And I think like even the people who didn't really get into the first No Devotion record, we're re-releasing that too. So like, I just think it's kind of that band's time right now. I'm really excited about it. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's good.
I can barely contain my excitement.
No, I know. I can hear it in your voice so much. Like, you're getting all giddy with this. And that's amazing. So do you have a release date for that? I didn't see if there was one.
No, there's one song that we decided to rework. So like, I don't think it'll be held back too much because of COVID, but we're going to finish. We're going to sort of, basically one of the songs, like the way that band works, we'll sort of do a bunch of different versions of a song. Like, what's the ballad version of the song? Like, what's the banger version? What's the heavy version of the song?
Oh yeah.
And like at the last minute we realized, oh, if this one song was like beachy and slow and sounded like kind of like a washed out memory, like, oh, we should do it like that.
Nice. And just to wrap up your other projects you're doing, you're doing some writing too. I read that you're creative writing or
what? Oh yeah.
What's up with that?
I've been working on something for, I've been not kind of getting into it too much, but I've been working on something writing wise that, um, that I it's been a lot of work. I've been putting a lot of time and work into it. Like secretly over the last 4 years, I've been kind of like working on it nonstop. So every time I hear like Joyce Carol Oates on a podcast talking about writing 2 novels a year, I'm like, you're insane. How do you do that? But I guess, you know, it's sometimes I think of like, you know, writing as a sort of second language that comes after songwriting. Cause songwriting, I really love it. And I think I do a very good job. As much as I have a challenge with singing, I'm a natural lyricist and I love writing song lyrics. But awesome. That being said, it's a totally different set of skills when you're writing something longer. Cause I feel like the limitation of the length of songs is a huge help for me.
Yeah.
You know, having to cram it in and take things apart and rework them until they fit inside 3 or 4 minutes is like, it's a beautiful limitation. And I always loved like Fugazi not having effects and stuff. It's like limitations are your friends in art. They really help, you know?
Absolutely. Well, hopefully we hear some news about that project soon. I mean, if you're spending that much time on it, I hope it amounts to, you know, I hope it doesn't just dwell in you know, in your own head or in your own manuscript. You know, I would love to see what that's all about. So that's cool.
Thanks, Shane.
That's cool, man. Well, dude, what else to tell the people? Anything else we missed or anything else to plug?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just so thrilled to be talking to you, man. And thanks for having me on. I'm glad we finally got it together. It's so cool.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I've had this huge smile on my face, just reminiscing about the old times and then hearing these stories that I didn't even know about myself. It's just wild. But I just love this conversation so much. Thank you.
Yes. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Shane. Take care.
Man. Until next time, man.
Sounds good.
Thanks, buddy. So there it is with Jeff. I absolutely loved every second of that conversation. I want to thank him so much for doing it. Finally, long overdue. And it looks like No Devotion's going to have some stuff coming out real soon. That's exciting. Keep your ear to the ground for all that news. Maybe we'll get some more Thursday stuff. Probably some shows. I don't know, but can't wait to find out. Next week, I'll be back with another great episode. And don't forget, Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, I'm on Twitch, twitch.tv/ShaneTold. I will have on Andy Sizek of all of his great projects. The guy's awesome. What a singer. That's free. That's live. So check it out. Wednesday, I'll be on with Mike Howell discussing the top 5 new releases. And big week for music this week and next week. Make sure you check it out on Friday. We talk about Architects and NOFX putting out new albums. So that's on the podcast feed. Just scroll down or up and you'll see all these episodes. We still don't have a name for our new show, but we'll figure something out. Regardless, it's a lot of fun talking to Mike. And I guarantee you, you will find out about some great new music that you didn't otherwise know. So check that out too. All right, I'm going to leave you with a tune. I played Understanding in a Car Crash as the little intro song. Of course, everybody knows that. But I want to play you one you might have missed that I love. This is the first track from the Thursday Envy Split. I think Thursday put it out again on another record, but I like this version more. It's called As He Climbed the Dark Mountain. Here it is, Thursday on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. And I'll see you next time.